This is episode 8 of Store and Forward, a podcast about the past and future of amateur radio. I am Kay Savitz, K6KJN. I am the curator of the Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communications, a service of the Internet Archive, and I am here with...
Steve Stroh, N8GNJ, and I am editor and publisher and chief bottle washer of the independent newsletter Zero Retries, which covers technological innovation in amateur radio and adjacent areas.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Kay.
Feel like I just saw you.
Yeah. We got to rub elbows quite a bit at PacificCon.
Got to hang out. We get to have dinner and share some time and watch each other's little sessions. And
I was impressed. That was my first time at PacificCon, which is held in San Ramon, California, Bay Area. And
when I was talking to people in the Bay Area, I was like, I went to a ham radio conference. It was in San Ramon. And the Bay Area people were like, where's San Ramon? That was my first PacificCon as well.
Yeah, we chose to drove down. We have two new kittens, and we didn't, it wasn't, the logistics weren't possible to leave them with anybody. So we had them in the car and figured that out. That was an interesting experience. There was a section there. We weren't sure we had a bit of a mechanical issue and needed some repairs along the way. So we ended up getting into San Ramon, in the wee hours, and we were driving through some country that we just thought we were going through the Twilight Zone, because it was completely black. There was no civilization, even though we were on an interstate highway. There was nothing. So turns out it was all agricultural land, and you know, the exits were labeled like road 15, road 16, et cetera. So, yeah.
But if you had an emergency, you had your ham radio in case there was a problem.
This is true. Yeah, Interstate 5, unlike our cross-country trip going west to east in 2022, we never lost cellular coverage on this trip. So that was really nice. I-5 is the north-south routes through California are well covered. So yeah, we had no major issues. So it was fun. And we were just under the weather and not feeling great. So we, as soon as PacificCon was over, instead of hanging around in the Bay Area and doing some fun stuff, which we had plans to go see the Internet Archive, we just turned around and headed back to Bellingham. So it took us a day and a half. So. It was good.
Nice.
So, and as I labeled my last issue of Zero Retries, PacificCon, a good time was had by all. And it really did seem, you know, like a good time was had by all. The two things that impressed my wife, Tina, with PacificCon was that there was, for the entire weekend, there was a Boy Scout troop there earning various merit badges and attending various educational sessions. And then there was probably a 15 station soldering demo running the whole weekend, and seemed to be well attended. And I was told that they were assembling Whisper transmitters, little add-on board for a Raspberry Pi. So you had to solder a number of components onto a board, and then you put it on a Raspberry Pi, attached an antenna, loaded some software, and boom, you were transmitting using the Weak Signal Propagation Reporter, WSPR mode, which gets around the world on amazingly low power through the magic of digital signal processing. It's just, if you look up WSPR, it's just amazing. It literally does things with radio that we wouldn't have ever imagined, and it's because we've got cheap available compute power now in addition to radio. So
neat. Yeah, I saw the Boy Scouts several times, and I was wearing their little outfits and being very polite and asking questions and soldering things, and that's great.
And the other thing that was interesting was that the sex balance was pretty was a lot saner at PacificCon. We saw a lot more women, saw a lot more younger folks, not just us gray hairs. So yeah, it was a good show, and I think we'll go back definitely next year. And it was certainly better demographics than our previous biggest event, which is CPAC in Seaside, Oregon, which is the Northwestern Division convention. This was the Pacific Division convention for ARRL. And let's see, other notable thing. Well, that was another interesting thing, is that there for the whole day of Saturday, I was in back-to-back interesting sessions about stuff I really wanted to hear about. And so they had an entire day of Zero Retries interesting presentations, including the one I did. So I talked late on Saturday, and you
Last session on
talked,
Saturday, as I recall.
and you talked first thing on Sunday. So
So what was the what sticks out in your mind is the most interesting session that you saw on Saturday?
well, the creator of the multi-mode digital voice modem, MMDVM, Jonathan Naylor, G4KLX, was there from the UK, and he did a session. He and his partner did a session about MMDVM and what the plans are for the next year or so. And the biggest takeaway for me was that he finally talked about this mode that I've been going on about in Zero Retries called MMDVM TNC. And it's a data mode that works on that hardware, but it ticks a lot of boxes. It's got a very robust waveform, same waveform as the DMR mode, digital voice mode. It uses integral forward error correction, meaning that the forward error correction, instead of being tacked on, such as but compatible with like FX, which was the FX25 mode, this one is integrated the way it ought to, the way forward error correction ought to be. It protects the whole transmission, and it's got various speed tiers all the way up to 3,400 bits per second. Now, that all has to get tested. He's tested it across his bench, and the modem is capable of it. The trick is getting radios that are. So anyway, he had been teasing me with all this stuff in private communication for most of this year, but I wasn't allowed to talk about it because he had not made it public. And it turns out that he had, in fact, made it public in a GitHub repository. Just I didn't know where the GitHub repository was to talk about it. So he revealed it in his presentation. So now I can talk about all of this stuff. And now, and it looks like he's not going to be working on it yet. He has submitted a grant proposal to ARDC to continue his funding for paying for his time to do full-time development. And we'll see how that goes. But the big news that they broke in their opinion, in their world, is that they are doing a transcoding system which includes two of the proprietary digital voice codec chips from a company called DVSI. This is for proprietary technologies. There's only one company that makes these, but there's going to be two of them, so they can simultaneously decode any digital voice system that they support and encode. So you could go from, for example, M17, if you had one of the nice new M17 portable radios, to say DMR, and you're participating in a DMR net through a little what's it called, hotspot, digital voice hotspot. So you can use any to it can be any to any,
So
and through
real-time
this.
transcoding, full duplex. Neat.
Well, I'm not sure about duplex. I'm not sure about full duplex. Well, oh, sorry.
Okay.
Yes, meaning you're transmitting and it's it's receiving a, yes, I'm sorry, correct, full duplex throughput,
Right.
not
Okay.
a throughput full duplex radio transmission.
Understood. Neat.
And that ticks a box, scratches a long-held itch from a lot of people that have been involved in digital voice, and apparently they think this is going to be very big, and that's what he's going to be putting his emphasis on. There's also a new generation in development of the MMDVM hardware that will be capable of even more things. And the original hardware was selected back a decade ago. This was their decade, 10 years on report this year, of MMDVM. So it's certainly time to come up with a better hardware. But what's been remarkable is that the backwards compatibility for the earliest hardware has been maintained. So they did a great job, and even was able to shoehorn this new data mode into the 10-year-old hardware. So that was cool. So I'm about data and this and the possibility of adding an MMDVM to a repeater and then being able to do these data modes through repeaters. And I went into a fair amount of detail in Zero Retries that, there's still a lot of work to be done, even though he's done the heavy lifting of creating the mode. There's still an awful lot of things. For example, if station A is capable of, say, 19.2 bits per second, 19.2 kbps, and another one is only capable of, say, 9600, there's no way to communicate that and shift and mix and match. You either have to, so it looks to me like you have to statically assign a speed, and then everybody has to use that. So that's to be determined, and it's one of the many reasons why I follow this mode called Vara FM that handles all this stuff. The creator of Vara FM just did a fantastic job of integrating a whole bunch of features, including auto shift, I think is what he called, something like that. Anyway,
Nice.
so that was the coolest thing I saw. There were lots of other presentations. There was a really good one by a guy named Bruce Perens, K6BP,
Sure.
who talked about his remote station in the desert that he accesses. He put into a shipping container, a 20-foot shipping container, I believe, and then put solar panels and a Starlink terminal on top of it. And then he gets to play with, long, big, messy antennas all over the place, and without bugging his wife, trying to hang antennas on his modest little home in Berkeley, California. And lots of interesting off-the-cuff conversations, and just had a great time. And the ARDC was there, and of course you were there.
Yeah, I had a booth. So I didn't go to a lot of talks except for yours because I was, being at the booth, being sociable and telling people about Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communications.
I was amused that you honed your message
The
midstream.
first day, Friday, got set up. The booths were supposed to be open around 3 or something, 3 to 6, just a few hours in Friday afternoon. And I had set up my booth and I had my little banner and I had my little handouts and had set up all these pictures of different collections that DLARC has added in the last 6 months or so. Pictures from Fair Radio Sales and from the Manuals Plus collection and the Len Winkler's Ham Radio and More radio shows. So I had all these photos and examples, and people to come to the booth, and I was showing them the pictures and describing the things. And I mean, after only 3 hours of that, I'm just like, this is way too much talking, and I'm not getting the information across fast enough. The baud rate was way too low, and so I ripped out most of the pictures. I went to the front desk of the hotel. I'm just like, can I have 5 pieces of blank paper from your printer? They're like, sure. So they hand me a handful of paper, and then I got my Sharpie and I wrote "free online ham radio library in huge letters, slapped those down, taped them to the table, and that was my elevator pitch. And people walking by and whatever, there's booth after booth and they don't know what they're looking at, and some people are shy, they don't want to. So anyway, I just had it right there, just like in 5 words, this is what we're doing. DLARC is a free online ham radio library, and that worked out really well. And I got to talk less, and if people wanted to know more, I'm happy to show them things and show them the pictures and get deep into it. But anyway, so that worked out well, and I had fun doing that. I gave two talks. One was the talk that you saw. It was called 20 Things I Learned as Curator of of DLARC. And I think that was pretty well attended and enjoyed that. And then also the Young Ladies Radio League, the YLRL, asked me to give a talk to them. So I did that on Saturday, and I gave kind of a off the cuff impromptu talk to a big group of people, and so that was fun. Highlights for me were probably the group dinner that included you and some people from ARDC and some other folks, and that was kind of fun. We just got to sit around and drink a beer and chat kind of informally, and that was great. I also really enjoyed personally the ham shack tent that was outside. Did you spend any time out there? Did you see it?
I just did a brief pass through. I'd seen the one at I forget one of the events I attended. So yeah, I was familiar with it. This was the traveling W1AW.
Yes, the traveling W1AW. And they had a tent outside with several HF rigs. One was on, I believe, 80 meters, one was on 40 meters, one was on 20 meters, and one was on 10 meters. And the 10 meter one was just doing FT8, which I read about, never really played with it. So I really got to learn about the specifics of using FT8. And the other ones were just on voice mode, and you can tune around and just chat.
So they were walk-up stations, and I was under the impression that they were making contacts and
No,
such.
they were walk-up stations. Anyone could sit down and
Okay.
start chatting. Yeah, no, you didn't have to sign up. You didn't. They weren't making. Wasn't like a contesting thing where they're trying to make con. And most of the radios, when I checked, when I walked by a couple times a day, most of the radios were free. There was always at least one or two radios that you could sit down at. Now, this it will probably not come as news to anybody who's listening or watching this podcast. But I hadn't been on HF in 30 years. I've never had an HF rig. Whenever I have been on HF, I'm, using a friend's shack. And I had not been on HF in 30 years. And I keep up with the tech, but more on a theoretical level. I'm not actually using it. My point is, when I sat down and actually saw SDR waterfalls on built into these rigs on HF, man, that changes everything. It just absolutely. I just like jumped 30 years in the future of what HF is like. It changes the game. There's no more just like tuning around, listening to listening for people calling CQ, or just kind of hunting for something. You can see an entire band at once, and you can just know exactly what frequency to turn to, where there might be something interesting. And you can even you tell you can okay, this is obviously CW, or maybe it's RDI, and you can go over there and beep beep beep, and then oh, here's clearly voice, and then you tune a little bit to the right of the line, and you're listening to the sideband. It's amazing. It's just I was absolutely just like this is fun. It's not just the hunting, just the listening to static.
It gives it the waterfall gives you a completely different dimension of the, you always, to me, when I've operated HF before, you were always wondering if something went wrong. Did the antenna fall down? Did the coax short out? Because you're not hearing stuff. But when you can look at the band, the whole band, and see the activity, and now some of these software-defined receivers that you can get, like the Kiwi SDR, they've got a wide enough bandwidth that you can watch all of HF at the same time, on the same antenna. Now, which is not necessarily optimum, but it gives you a much bigger picture of what's going on. And then if you really want to know what's going on, you can, temporarily pop into someone else's software-defined receiver, on the web, and say, oh, well, the band is up, so maybe there is something going on. So yeah, I agree. It's a completely different world, and it with modern tech, digital technology, and the FT8, to me is the way that I, so, well, okay, people want to work Bellingham, Washington, grid square XXX,
Yeah.
CN88, I forget.
I'm not sure FT8 is for me. I don't know. I don't know where the line is for me. Honestly, I don't. One of the reasons I don't have an HF rig, I never have, is personally for me, I don't want to be chatting with strangers and hear about their antenna and what the weather is like in Tuscaloosa, right? That doesn't appeal to me. But I want more communication than FT8 gives you, which is none. It's absolutely no, almost no human interaction there at all.
Yes.
It's just like, yep, I could get my signal there, and you kind of wait a minute for I have 15 seconds to send you, hi, and you have, but it's not even hi. It's just like a canned CQ message, and then they send back a canned, S report, and then you send back a canned RRR, and that's it. And and it takes a minute, and so I don't think that's the kind of ham radio fun that I'm looking for. I can see the appeal, but anyway, it's not for me. Maybe. I don't know.
That's the beauty of amateur radio, is that it's a huge hobby with many, many facets, and you can, there you can find your, if you're into radio technology, if you have a bent for radio technology, you can find something in amateur radio that's interesting. And one of the interesting variants of, okay, so for example, FT8. FT8 is a great mode for doing summits on the air or parks on the air. You can get up, you can go hiking, or set up in a park that you've never done, and just turn it on and let it auto respond to people that want to work these parks. And it's an interesting logistical challenge or technical challenge, depending on how you view it. Other people do it purely with CW, others do it with voice. It's a big hobby. It's a huge hobby. Now, the stuff that amazes me is leveraging all this digital processing technology to be able to send email messages over HF and VHF and UHF. And doing bulletin board systems. There's one guy who's doing an interesting experiment. He's doing cross-country trips. I forget what, why, but he runs VARA HF and then feeds his APRS data into that. And that technology is, again, signal processing, all about signal processing. And the guy's basically got countrywide coverage with his, mobile HF rig. And it's so much more reliable than it's ever been before. So we're, just proving out these digital technologies is just amazing. And one of the things that makes a difference now is that a lot of us can't do or can't do very well HF anymore, at least weak signal HF, because We've just got too much urban noise, switching power supplies, solar panels, just lots and lots of noise in the HF bands. And the digital technology lets you power through all that. It basic, the forward air correction, the various other techniques that, or even just remote stations, like what Kasich VP demonstrated. Just,
Right.
so it's a I view the hobby has gone through more technological evolution in the last decade than it had the previous 30 or 40. So,
Your remote station reminded me when I was talking to one of the president, I believe, of the Portland Amateur Radio Club. They said that any member, spend their $20 a year or whatever it costs. They're setting up a remote station, and any member can access it via internet and get on HF. And I'm just like, that's what a great way to have my own borrowed HF rig, basically, for $20 a year, and not have to deal with setting up an antenna in my backyard.
Well, a lot of if people haven't been following it, Flex Radio has been on top of this since the for the last 5, 6 years with their they make three different products. They make a front panel, they make a radio, and they make an integrated front panel on radio combination. So those and the connection between the two of them is an Ethernet cable. So and TCP/IP. So if you want to put the radio somewhere RF quiet, like what K6VP did, and then have the front panel on your desk in your study, it feels like it feels like radio. It's the same experience. You just don't happen to have the radio box close to you. And with the really high quality internet, options like Starlink, man, in fact, a friend of mine and I did a test with Starlink using IPv6, and we're pretty sure that we weren't transit. We were basically going up to the same satellite and back, because we were separated by about 150 miles, and that's easily within the footprint of one Starlink satellite. So we were just doing ping to, various tests, and it looked to us like we were staying on the same satellite and never had to transition outside the satellite network to, to a ground station.
Keeps latency low, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. So.
So the other thing I want to talk about is after PacificCon, just a short drive away, Internet Archive was having its big homecoming slash open house week. And there's a couple of public events, but also just like all the Internet Archive employees show up that week and meet each other. And because it's a pretty distributed organization, people work all over the world. So we showed up, kind of meet in person, have some lunches together, some, bonding activities. And so that was cool, but it was a challenging week for internet, or kind of challenging month for Internet Archive, because as has been all over the tech news, Internet Archive suffered a hack. First, there was a distributed denial of service attack, and then there was a hack. And so the archive powers that be decided, okay, security is not up to snuff, and took the site down. And was just like, we're gonna shore up the security, and make sure this never happens again. So archive was basically down for 2 weeks, and it is up again now in read-only mode. And I believe, I hope that within the next little while, it will be back to more or less normal, or new normal, more secure than it was. So that was happening. So that this Internet Archive open house days was happening against the backdrop of the archive not being in the best shape. There were two public events. neither of which you went to because you decided to go home.
Yeah, sorry.
One was a tour of the physical storage in Richmond, California. They call it physical storage. I call it's a warehouse. But it's a very cool warehouse. So there's a tour of that, and Brewster Kahle was giving tours, and there was you could see how the scanning machines work, and you could see how film digitizing works, and there was also really good tamales. So that was one day, and then the next day was the big show, which was the annual open house and the annual celebration, and there was they were a couple hours. There was an hour and a half of talks and music and talking about just pumping up libraries and the Internet Archive, Internet Archive specifically, and libraries in general. I realized afterwards that basically this was church. This was church for people who love libraries. It actually started with Internet Archive has in its it, it's the building used to be a church. It was built in 1923. And so there's a pipe organ in there. So the whole thing started out with a pipe organist playing old music from the public domain. And then there was the talks, and it was like, it was like a very powerful, positive, sermon basically of from about libraries.
So there was a pipe organ playing in the same space as high density servers. I'm just thinking, some of those bass notes, rattling the servers.
Well,
It's like.
yes. To be fair, I don't know if this is makes it better, but the pipes are in the all in the ceiling, in the ceiling roof area. So it's not like they're just like, right there rattling the peta boxes. But yeah, it's in all the same place. So and then so the sermons, and then there was music. It was and I and It was basically church, it was like going to Sunday service, except it was on a Wednesday, and it was the church of libraries. Anyway, I had a great time. There's a write-up about what happened, in the Internet Archive blog. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And I had a great time, and I met a lot of people that work with. I met some DLARC supporters, and anyway, so it was all made between that and PacificCon. It made for a very busy and positive week for me.
I had a good time with my talk. It was a very receptive crowd, and I actually got people coming up to me afterwards. I tried to do less of a pitch for zero retries as I did for this. This is the kind of thing that's going on, now with, technological innovation in amateur radio that you're not hearing about, and that message was well received. And so yeah, definitely I don't know why we wouldn't go back next year. It was a positive event. Let me think of a few other things. Well, I finally got to meet Jerry of Connect Systems, who sells the first world's first commercial M17 portable radio. Let's see. Few other things. Oh, I met a business partner of an old colleague from the wireless industry who now sells a new version of roof towers, which was pretty cool. Got to talk to them for quite a bit, and yeah, I just overhearing lots of interesting conversations. The folks, from ARDEN, Amateur Radio Emergency Digital Network, were there talking about their latest and greatest offerings, and got to meet the real brains of the outfit, who's been in charge of the heavy lifting of all the software upgrades. They put a brand new GUI on their system, and That was very cool to hear that firsthand. And oh man, just yeah. Sorry, I was a bit rushed today, and I didn't get to pull up all my notes from the whole event. So anyway, so you haven't been able to add anything to DLARC lately.
No, I have a couple. We're going long. I can talk about this other stuff next time, but it's all right.
Okay.
But I did do one other other quick thing that I did do. My other podcast is Antic, the Atari 8-bit podcast, and I've been doing that for more than a decade. And with on that podcast, I interview people who did interesting things with Atari 8-bit computers. And I did one recently that overlap with amateur radio stuff. I published an interview with a gentleman named Nick Kennedy, and Nick is amateur call sign WA5BDU. He had back in the 80s created software to turn his Atari computer into a keyer for his paddle Morse code key. So like the key would connect to the Atari would connect to his radio, and then he could like send commands, to the Atari to do things, to change his sending speed or whatever. Anyway, he was a very interesting guy to talk to. He also wrote some a packet radio terminal program for the Atari, and so anyway, we talked about that, and the video for that is in my YouTube channel. I'll put a link to the show notes. Some nice overlap between my love of Atari and my love of ham radio.
That reminds me of a favorite story that I read somewhere along the line in 73 magazine. I believe it was a letter to the editor. And it was about an experience that someone had overheard. And it was one of these legendary, very high speed CW operators getting on and saying, calling CQ, and he started at like 20 words a minute, and so CQ, CQ, no lids, no kids, no space cadets. And somebody came back to him with perfect 20 word per minute, CW, and said, "Hey, pleased to meet you," and blah, blah, blah. And he says, "Oh, you got a really good fist. You want to go a little faster?" And so they kept upping the ante, till finally the guy said, "I have never met anybody who can, keep up with me, at full speed." He says, What kind of a key do you have?" And he said, "Commodore 64." So,
Yep, I believe it. Hilarious.
a lot of people don't think it through that, CW is actually a digital mode. And so,
It's the OG.
Exactly. So, it's perfectly, the computer can communicate perfectly fine, using any, digital method, including CW. So, well, good to talk to you again. It
Good
was
to talk
great
to
to
you.
rub actually, be in meet space with you at PacificCon, and we'll have to do that again sometime.
They've announced the dates for next
Oh, they
year.
did. Oh, good.
I
Okay.
just happened to look at the website. It says save the date. PacificCon 2025 will be Friday, October 10th through Sunday, October 12th, 2025.
Okay, well, I'm going to get my reservation in. So you had a really good experience with the booth. They didn't give you any grief. You were
No,
not.
there was they I got a discount for being a nonprofit, and I sat next to interesting people and at their booths, and no, there's no grief at all. It was a
Right.
very positive experience.
We got to talk to one of the organizers while we were having lunch, and he said, that this is a like the biggest ones, this is a well-oiled machine, and they have people, in the pipeline, for years in advance. And they, and basically, being the coordinator, you get burned out. So, the next person in line, takes it for the next year. And, so they understand the process really well. And this, and that hotel, that Marriott was very conducive. It had plenty of room to, and they didn't even use all of the room that they had allocated. There's a tail in your background.
The dogs are decided they ready to go out. They say the podcast should be over
Fair
now.
enough. I get it. So, well, 73K.
73, Steve. All right, hold on. Dogs, give me 2 more minutes to read the outro thing. This has been Store and Forward, your podcast about the past and future of amateur radio and dogs who want to get their energies out. You can our address for this podcast is storeandforwardradio.org. If you go there, you will find show notes for this episode and all of the previous episodes. I am Kay Savitz, K6KJN, curator of the Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communications, which is an unparalleled resource for unparalleled amateur radio library. I hope you go check it out because it's incredible. And I have been talking to my buddy Steve.
And I am Steve Stroh, editor and publisher and chief bottle washer of Zero Retries newsletter, which can be found at www.zero, Z-E-R-O, retries, retries.org, which discusses technological innovation in amateur radio. And it publishes every Friday at 15:30 Pacific. The publication is free. Just sign up and you will get it in your email. Or I also notify with a bit of a delay on Mastodon and Mastodon.radio and Blue Sky.
Blue sky.
Is it?
Blue
Yeah.
sky is smiling at me.
It's the only thing I do on Blue Sky. So
Okay.
anyway, let's wrap.
Scroll, let's wrap. And I'm going to say for archivists in the far future, we recorded this on October 30th, 2024. Should have said that before, but better late than never.
Oh, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. All
Yeah.
right, 73.
73.